What does digital transformation mean to you?
How do you explain away millions of dollars in unplanned downtime because a technician can't find the right information fast enough? It's the cost of repair now. Engineering costs are a lot higher than service costs. Now you've got three or four people working on the same problem. How much did it really cost to fix that system? Going back and looking for people with more experience, we call them the graybeards. And these graybeards are starting to retire. You know, I talked to one fella here a while back, and he said that in 6 months, 360 years of experience had left their service organization, and they were left with a lot of younger people.
All right. Welcome to another PLM Quick 30 with Archer Gray. I'm your host, Patrick Sullivan. And today we have a very special guest, Scott Alshaus with GPSL. And GPSL specializes in content management. And if you don't know what that means, you are about to get educated. Scott's the VP of sales at GPSL and has a long history related to PLM and content management. So we're excited about talking with Scott today, and he's been gracious enough to spend a little bit of his time and share his knowledge with everybody listening. So thanks for listening to the podcast. And without further ado, let's hear a little bit from Scott. So Scott, thanks again. I appreciate you being on the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Patrick. It is fantastic to be here. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, great. So, you know, I just gave probably the shortest summary of what GPSL does, but could you give everybody a little bit of history and bring us to the present? What does GPSL do?
Well, let me give you my view from 30,000 feet of who I am and what I'm doing here for GPSL and what our company's doing for our customers out there. A little bit about me. I am a career sailor from the U.S. Navy. I worked on combat systems on aircraft carriers for a long time and absolutely loved it. I miss it a lot. My interest in service and parts manuals started there, and I used them a lot in my day-to-day work, and even today in my hobbies, I use a lot of service manuals. So I like to get under the hood of my truck and wrench around in there and try to make it work better. I was fortunate to be on an assignment during my Navy career to transform about 12 years of proprietary technical information and graphics into a form that made it a lot more useful for fleet readiness. That was just a huge success, and they're still using it out there today. My career after the Navy still kept me in contact with a lot of folks in aerospace and defense and some major manufacturers worldwide. My focus during that time was on best practices for intelligent graphics and technical illustration that was born out of 3D CAD data. You know, it's a pretty rich source of information, and being able to use it in a better way for technical illustration for parts and service manuals downstream was pretty important. So I enjoyed playing a role in that, and still involved in some of those standards today. Another thing that I was really keen on was human factors. You know, we make great service and parts information, we make great illustrations, but how is that actually being consumed by people like you and me and technicians that come and fix our stuff for us? It's sometimes under some pretty arduous conditions. So I had a chance to study that as well. Today, you know, I'd say my role's matured a little bit on something I've been doing for a long time, and that's really helping clients realize the business value of well-made solution for service and parts information and instructions. You know, it's fantastic to be on board with a company like GPSL or Global Publishing Solutions, as many know us. The company, it's global. We've got just the absolute best talent in the industry regarding solutions for publishing, military specifications. One of those is S-1000D. That's trending a lot right now. Our roots go back to the early 1980s. We were under a different name then called 3B2, and we were solving some really complex publishing problems for manufacturers, some professional publishers, media, and even legislatures all over the world. From where you're conducting the podcast from today, your state legislatures using our help for the entire process of lawmaking and publishing that information out. And it's just a huge amount of information for the legislatures to process. So anyway, when you look out the window and across to where those folks are out there making up new laws, you have an idea that we have a piece of that. Demand for our content comes in a lot of different forms. GPSL's critical in supporting, all these different industries. So in a nutshell, I'll just sum it up that we're experts in organizing and structuring really complex and critical information. And then we want to make sure that it's getting to the right people at the right time and in the right format.
I mean, that's quite an introduction. You did a much better job than I did.
I had to expand a little bit.
I mean, that was really great information, and I appreciate you taking the time. I mean, first off, thank you for your service. We live in such a great country, and it's folks like you that allows the luxury to live in such a great country. So thank you.
Well, thanks for acknowledging that. There's a lot of folks out there that are still carrying the torch today and doing a fantastic job, and we never want to forget what they're doing for us as well.
Absolutely. So one of the things that you had mentioned that I'm particularly interested in, because everybody's talking about digital thread and 3D, well, the promise of 3D and how it's used is also something that people are very interested in. You had said that there's a lot of 3D work that you guys specialize in related to instructions and how people use it. I'm curious, at what point are you involved in establishing best practices or leading practices around 3D to help ensure that when the 3D designs are being created, that it's the right information required for people to leverage it in an effective way when they're servicing?
Well, there's obviously the bill of material information, which engineering is often preparing in some form. That is going to be important for downstream consumption, and where they're going to take the engineering bill of material and transition that over to a service bill of material. So that's one of the areas that we're helping our customers translate that in a good way to set up a consistent linkage. The other thing that we're helping folks with is being able to consume that rich 3D CAD data that's being generated upstream for technical illustration purposes downstream. Now, if you've got engineering modeling, everything that is necessary for the service team to create high quality graphical content, you are way ahead of the game and you're going to have fantastic service information. There's no doubt about it. So I think the service organizations and engineering have been communicating with each other for a long time over the years on getting CAD data in a form that they can use it. And in some cases, the engineers actually created the graphics for the illustrators and writers in the service organization. It wasn't their primary job, and Just give a little story here where, the illustrator or the writer, every day they keep going back to engineering and saying, can you open up this model for me? And then if you could, I need you to position it this way, and I need you to explode these parts off in that way. And could you put a few call outs on there for me? And of course, the engineer is totally happy to stop doing what his assignment was to help out the writer. So they produce this, and the writer goes away, and he starts to look at it. And he says, you know, if this was turned another 5 degrees, it would be even better. So he goes back, okay? So that going back and going back, after a while, the engineering department puts a welcome sign on their door that says, illustrators and writers keep out. So the idea of improving the process so that the service organization can consume engineering data on their own for the purposes of illustration or parts information, obviously brings a lot of goodness to the engineering department because they don't have to worry about it anymore. And I think another piece of this, the engineers don't have to worry about writers or illustrators actually making changes to the engineering data. You know, that used to spook some people out there. You know, they didn't want the design being changed. They're not. The process is set up in such a way that they're only consuming it. And should the engineers make any changes, Patrick, they're actually alerted to those changes downstream. So they're able to understand what the impact of an engineering change is. You know, do I need to go in and update these 25 illustrations that were based off of that model? Do I need to change steps in a procedure because of the engineering change? They didn't know this in the past, with the exception of they might find out about it during a meeting that they had every 2 weeks in a conference room. Today, the capabilities are there to let them know automatically that this change has occurred. And you can tell I'm really passionate about this stuff.
I love that you're going into detail on these stories and bringing examples to life, because I'm sure anybody listening who's experienced this, whether on the service side or on the engineering side or somewhere in between or manager level, they see opportunities to be more efficient. And essentially what I keep hearing from you is, in essence, some aspect of digital thread, which if we take a step back for a second, I'm curious, because I talk with a lot of clients and prospects, and PTC, for instance, has done a really good job about putting in digital transformation into this world of PLM and elevating what the legacy definition of PLM, or maybe the utopian definition of PLM, and putting it in the context of digital transformation, digital thread. So I'm curious, because in this Q4, for instance, of 2019 and going into Q1, Archer Gray is trying to help our clients define what digital transformation means. And what I'm finding most commonly is that it means something different to everybody that I talk to. So I'm curious, from your perspective, what does digital transformation mean to you?
Well, let me start out with where I first started hearing about it and learning about it. It's coming to mind from several years ago, and it was its relevance to marketing initiatives. You know, companies had a lot of different channels of messaging that were going out in hopes of generating business, but there was just no way for them to be consistent or capturing response or feedback to all of this messaging. Some smart people started figuring out ways to make that marketing messaging more consistent. And through methods of feedback that are available to them today, they were trying to determine which messaging was effective and which wasn't, and how they could improve on that to improve the sales of their products and services. So that's where I first became acquainted with the terms around digital transformation. then started applying that to all the goodness that a manufacturer might be doing through their conceptual designs, design, manufacturing processes, and everything downstream to service. And one of the areas of digital transformation, I'd say this is a subset of it, but something that I became really interested in was what was referred to as servitization. This is where a business transforms to realize greater value from the delivery of service or from their service organization. The key to success in this is making sure that they've got a mature service and parts information process. And if they can connect to that rich data that is upstream from them in the engineering and third-party business systems, it's even better. And you know, you were mentioning our partners PTC in there, and they've already built out this entire end-to-end process with regard to digital transformation. It does allow a company to focus on their business initiatives, be it around the products that they're making and selling to customers, or you know, if those products are intended to be in service for a lot of years, they're going to require a lot of maintenance over those years, and they're going to require repair over those years. How are we, you know, as manufacturers, going to be able to service them effectively so that they're always available to the end users, if it's in the commercial space or relating to how the service might use them? You know, it's all about mission readiness. Is that equipment available to the commander to be able to go out and support the missions and also protect the soldiers, sailors, Marines, and airmen that are out there in the field too? So those are things that I'm thinking about with regard to digital transformation.
So to extend that a little bit and dig into digital transformation, is that changing the discussion that you're having around, I mean, first of all, it sounds like it does, but the present trend of IoT and digital thread, is it affecting how you're interacting with clients and prospects?
I think to some extent, you have the clients that are bringing up digital thread, they're bringing up IoT, and oftentimes that is their initial focus. They're thinking about those. They've been hearing a lot about those things. But I like to, I guess, educate a little bit on the importance of having a mature service and parts information and instructions process. The IoT is collecting information from sensors, and that's fantastic, you know, that it's doing that. And I think it's doing it better than anything that I've experienced in the past. By the way, I think IoT has probably existed in different ways for a lot of years. We just didn't call it that. But all of that sensory information that's coming in from the field is being processed, but at the end of the day, you have to diagnose something and you need to repair or maintain something based on that information that's coming in from the field. So that IoT process needs to be able to reference the up-to-date and accurate service and parts information that was born out of that digital thread process connected to the upstream engineering information.
Yeah, it's interesting. We just recorded a podcast with the gentleman from Ansys on simulated digital twin. And he had mentioned that, you know, there's three pillars necessary in order to successfully pull off implementing a simulated digital twin and taking advantage of it. The first, obviously, is executive support. And he wasn't talking about getting funding. He was talking about them being an evangelist throughout the organization and reinforcing that that's a vision that they're pursuing. And the second one, which kind of surprised me, but made a lot of sense after he explained it, was having a strategy around IoT. It's one thing to implement it and collect a lot of data, but if you don't know what you're going to do with the data or what you're intending to and what the goal and purpose is, implementing simulated digital twin will be flawed and kind of aimless. But that was the second pillar. And once you have those two, then you're essentially ready to go. And the examples that he used to support that, he brought up VW, where rather than building and reiterating on a particular prototype, they've got the ability to throw different scenarios at it so that when it finally goes to production, it's already gone through various aspects of testing based on the goals that they were looking to originally achieve. So I think what you just described brings in another dynamic to it, which quite frankly expands, you know, the definition of digital thread from my perspective, taking into account the service side of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is important. You know, it was interesting you brought up the last podcast there. And I think about the technicians out there. Oftentimes with a new vehicle introduction, they get the initial service information that was probably based off of a prototype and, you know, how to diagnose it, how to service it properly. And then once that equipment is out in the field, then they start getting feedback in some form. You know, I'm not going to say it's very sophisticated all the time, but now engineering organizations and service organizations are creating a whole host of service bulletins. And technicians are having to first reference the service and the parts manuals. And then it's like there are 84 service bulletins issued in the last 3 months. Which one do I go to and how does it override the service manual? And this digital thread process actually has the capability of probably dispensing with a lot of that problem for technicians out there in the future, because it is possible to dynamically keep service and parts information up to date and accurate for those that are working with it out in the field. And what does that mean for the technician? Well, one, the technician feels like he's doing a fantastic job. He found the right information quickly and he got the equipment back in service. For the company, I guess if it's a dealership, well, they get to service more cars per day because the techs are fixing them faster and the dealership's customers are really, really happy because they're getting their cars back a lot faster than what they expected they would.
That sounds like somebody who tries to fix his own cars.
Yeah, I do, but I know my limits. And so I have a fantastic mechanic and he tells me stories about all the cars that he works on.
That's great. All right. So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you a couple questions around content management, because I've had exposure to it, at least from customers that we deal with, you know, implementing PLM. And so I'm going to ask you what's happening today and kind of the future of it. So who typically owns content management responsibility? And so this is going to be a two-part question. That's the first question. And that's today. Mm-hmm. And if they're looking to implement a digital thread program, because you started off at the beginning of this podcast talking about service and engineering folks collaborating early on, and then as service would come back to engineering, they used to become an unwelcome in jest, but that iteration spoke to a need to have cleaner and more efficient communication. So I'm curious, ultimately, who owns content management today? And then considering digital thread and that efficiency aspect, who should own it in the future?
Okay. Well, let's start with the owner, and that's not always an easy question to answer. It can vary a lot by a company and industry. They have a lot of different titles. They come from a lot of different roles out there. I'd say the top owner of content management is going to be somebody who understands how all this information is going to be consumed by technicians, students, consumers, or the subject matter experts that are inside of the company. The content has to help the end user learn or perform a task correctly. An example of such a person, you know, would be myself. You know, I started as a technician working on really complex systems aboard ship. And, you know, later I was introduced to training as an instructor. And then I found my way into an assignment where I was creating and managing service information, you know. So with that said, you know, it's not the only way, but it does require a good level of experience or understanding how that information is going to be consumed. The second role of the manager is ensuring that the information structured in the right way. Trending in aerospace and defense is S1000D. That is being used alongside other legacy standards out there. I mean, there's a lot of equipment that's been in service with our military and airlines for a long time. So they don't always adopt the most current standard, but some of the old ones continue to work well. But there are cases where a customer has old stuff and new stuff, and they have contractual requirements to do both. We call this multi-spec, and there's just a lot of different ways out there that you can handle that. We're expert in doing it. And I would say also in commercial manufacturing, they've got structured requirements too. The third content management role, managing access to the source information, you know, that's going to ensure that everything's optimized for accurate and up-to-date information out to the field. The technicians, operators, even me as a consumer out there, we want to make sure that we've got good information. I don't want to be hoping that somebody on YouTube is giving the best way of doing it. I've got myself in trouble so many times by watching YouTube videos. I prefer to have official information. and if YouTube info is built off of bad tech data, then we're really in trouble. So
you might appreciate this story. I have a colleague that is a gearhead who likes to take apart cars and engines and all that stuff. He watched a YouTube video on how to clean. Well, see, you can tell I'm not a car guy because I don't know the part, but essentially where the pistons fire.
Okay.
He needed to clean it out. And I think the suggestion was to get crushed walnuts and basically use a power sprayer to basically clean it off. And I think that was a YouTube video, unofficial, but he did it. And he said it worked like a gem. So
all right. I know that crushed walnuts do work well for cleaning parts as long as it's in a parts cleaning machine. I haven't seen them used. I'm going to have to look up the YouTube video. It's either going to be an aha moment or it's going to be, oh my gosh, are they really doing this?
Well, now I'm going to have to connect you with them. And by the way, anybody listening, I do not advise you to try this out. I am not a mechanic.
No, and we're not jumping off the roof here. Don't do this at home.
That's right.
Good.
All right. So I think we've got some good background here. So as I had mentioned, a lot of clients are pursuing this, you know, and from our perspective, it's this evolution, right, of PDM to PLM to some will say digital transformation if they're looking at it through the eyes of PLM, but digital thread, right? Mm-hmm. Data required to build and maintain a product. So from your perspective, what building blocks need to be in place for a client to be ready to really have effective content management?
Well, this relates back to something that I said a moment ago. They need to understand a day in the life of a technician or an operator. You know, if this is about service and parts information, you know, they work under all different types of conditions. You know, is it sunny, snowing, wind blowing? Is it day, night? You know, where's the equipment located? So they need to understand those things. A lot of times people that are looking at service and parts information upstream or downstream, they're creating all of this in a laboratory environment in the factory. Bright lights are on, you know, it's 72 degrees every day, all day long. And their equipment may be subjected to a lot of different conditions out there. And the people that are operating and maintaining it are subjected to the same things. So that, I think, is number one that they need to take into consideration. The other thing that they need to look at is making sure that the technicians can find that information quickly so that it helps them do the job right the first time. One, it makes them really happy that they did a great job, and the recipients of the service, the end users, the operators, they're happy because they've got the system available to them. So if everyone that's upstream in digital transformation or service information, PLM processes, keeps that technician or operator front of mind, there's a lot of goodness that's going to result from it. From a tactical perspective, the service organization, they need to first understand best practices and structure, such as S1000D or other standards that they want to work with, or maybe they've recently been contracted to work with it. For aerospace and defense, a lot of new contracts that are coming out from defense agencies to these manufacturers is specifying S1000D and a very specific issue of S1000D on how this is going to be created. Meanwhile, others are specifying legacy standards out there. So it's up to them to make sure that they understand that structure. And then it's time for them to look upstream, collaborate with their engineering partners up there on how they're going to consume that CAD data and how they're going to consume the bills of material and have an effective link to that information, knowing that those wonderful people in engineering love to make changes, and the folks downstream need to be able to see when those changes are being made and subsequently be able to recognize all of the service and parts information that has been impacted by those changes. And oftentimes that can be done in minutes. It's not the wait for that conference room meeting that you had every 2 weeks in the past. So setting up a solid data exchange, you know, it may require some adjustments in old processes. I've seen it a lot of times, but the key is to keep your focus on providing value and excellent information to the end users. And changing some upstream processes is a good thing.
So says the person responsible for the content.
And the user of the content.
And the user, that's right. Well, I can imagine that, because I wanted to ask a couple of, well, I think you mentioned them because you've mentioned S1000D and the importance of understanding the structure and the order in which it's assembled, right? Mm-hmm. What are some compelling justifications and or pain points? I don't know if we want to cover both of them in the same question, but essentially, what are some of the justifications for somebody to have effective content management practices that can help them overcome the pain points that they're experiencing?
Oh, I got a long list for you on this. So here's some of the triggers why I think a company would want to become a lot better at service and parts information and instruction processes. So it wasn't that long ago that I read that a technician spends 46% of his day trying to find the right information before they can perform a task. That's almost half a day, you know, that a technician is trying to figure out how he can do something before they even get a chance to start turning a wrench. Obviously, that starts to stack up a lot of things that need to be fixed or repaired. Another thing is, how do you explain away millions of dollars in unplanned downtime because a technician can't find the right information fast enough to put the systems back in service. This happens more often than you think out there. And you may have those technicians going back and looking for people with more experience. We call them the graybeards. And these graybeards are starting to retire. You know, I talked to one fella here a while back, and he said that in 6 months, 360 years of experience had left their service organization, and they were left with a lot of younger people inside the company that didn't have the same experience. So they were relying on tech manuals for some pretty complex systems in the factories, and they oftentimes couldn't find information fast enough when a system went down. By the way, this systems in the factory were all sensored up, so they quickly told people whenever they were hurting, but there was no direct linkage into the technical documentation. So even though they got an alarm that something was wrong, it took them a long time to get in there and figure out the fix for it and then get it back in service and do all the testing. So these are real pain points that companies have out there. The other thing, whenever you escalate problems up to the graybeards or engineering, is now you've got more people working on a problem that could have or was expected to be solved by one person. It's the cost of repair now. Engineering costs are a lot higher than service costs sometimes. And now you've got three or four people working on the same problem. How much did it really cost to fix that system? So those are things that need to be thought about as well. And I'd say a lot of folks haven't done that in the past.
So
go ahead.
If I might interrupt you for a second here, Scott. So with all those examples, which I'm seeing all of those scenarios happen all over the place with our clients. So have you seen customers, you know, everybody talks about ROI, and I've seen a few do it effectively, right? Where you understand the objectives that you want to achieve, the pain points you want to overcome, or at least improve upon. And then you justify this implementation and the strategy to do it. Have you seen people come back in and do a comparative analysis to make sure that the KPIs were achieved?
I think customers are just starting to do that. They're coming back and starting to measure what they actually gained by improving on the digital thread process. I know companies go in with some soft metrics on what they expect to gain. And you know, I've had a chance to look at some of those with some of our customers, and I think some of them are very conservative. You know, maybe a 30% efficiency across the organization and how they create and manage and publish their content over how they were doing it previously. I would suggest it might be a lot higher. If they were reusing the 3D CAD data for illustration purposes in the proper way, they may be gaining 50% or more efficiency over how they were doing illustration in the past. So those things internally in the company, they should definitely be able to go back and capture that. As long as they were doing some measurements of their legacy processes leading into the new initiative. With regard to field service improvements, that goes back to the service organization partnering with them. Make sure that you've captured metrics up front. And then through being able to provide more up-to-date and accurate information to the technicians, did we reduce the time to find information from 46% of the day to 10% of the day? Did we reduce the amount of escalations from service up to engineering, which obviously results in a reduction in cost of service for those companies? So I don't have any hard examples of a customer that would be willing to say this is what we gained broadly, and some of them are very protective of that information because it's a competitive differentiator for them and how they are creating and delivering service today.
Well, I think those are good examples to point people in a direction so they can begin thinking about how to even measure that in the first place. The statistics and KPIs will just be prioritized and relevant to each organization, right? And as you say, in many ways, a competitive advantage. But I think your advice in tackling some of those key ones that you typically see will give a lot of people some value and some direction as they're developing their plan. So that's really good insight. Thank you. So I know we're coming up here on the end and I want to be respectful of your time, but I'm curious, do you have any advice for folks looking to embark on this journey of improving their content management?
Well, I do have a few things here. You know, one for a manufacturer that is looking to differentiate themselves. You know, we know that executives every year, they have initiatives to grow the business, grow profitability, things like that. Oftentimes, they're looking at ways that they can create new products or change existing products and market them in different ways. And I would like to suggest that those companies consider looking at the digital thread process and their service and parts information and instructions downstream. A focus on service could certainly result in new business from product sales because customers are just so happy with the products that they have. And I'd suggest they may be able to increase their aftermarket business as well. It's not all about marketing here. It's just having a more effective digital thread process that involves service and parts and all the goodness of being connected to upstream engineering processes. Following that, you know, advice for anyone that's getting on this, understand how the technicians and end users consume the information. They want to accomplish their tasks, do it very well, and have high fives at the end of the day saying, look what I did. You know, people just love to talk about what they've done well. Work together with the upstream folks in engineering, with third-party business systems that you might need information from for service so that you can create accurate and up-to-date information that goes out to the field. And just never forget who's using that product and service information out there.
That's great advice. In fact, I'm writing it down for myself.
Great. Good. Pass it on, please.
Oh, I'm trying. That's why I have to record it. Well, Scott, I really want to thank you for taking the time in sharing all of the great advice and the stories and the experiences and the value that you provide in the market. I've really learned a lot and have enjoyed talking with you. I guess there's one thing worth mentioning. You know, you had talked about, I know that you're an avid podcast listener as well. As of today, officially, all of Archer Gray's PLM Quick 30s are now on Apple Podcasts. So you can subscribe there and download them and catch up on everything that we've discussed for not only today, but in the last year and a half. So thanks for the additional inspiration. We've had it on the to-do list for a while, but after hearing your feedback, we prioritized it a bit more.
Fantastic. I'll be adding to that subscription list as soon as we finish.
Well, Scott, any parting words?
Well, you know, I'm sure that I'm the recipient of a lot of great products and services from our listeners out there. And I just want to tell you, keep inventing, keep improving those designs, and then help keep those products in service for a long time with great parts and service information. You know, your customers and your company are going to benefit from it, and I will too.
Ditto on that comment. So, Scott, just one last thing. How can people find you if they want to reach out and contact you?
Well, for anyone who wants to learn more, I'd ask them to please navigate to gpsl.co. That's gpsl.co, not .com. Or you can connect with me directly, and that is at sallshouse@gpsl.co, and I'll spell that out. sallshouse@gpsl.co. Hey, Patrick, I really appreciate you having me on today. You can guess I'm excited about the topic, and I hope we can talk more about this in the future.
I look forward to it. Thanks so much for taking the time, and I really enjoyed the conversation, Scott.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.